I'm not hiding, I said. I'm contemplating the meaning of life.
Oh, whatever,
Lila said, stepping into the room. She wrinkled her nose disdainfully.
This place smells, and you smell. You should try taking a bath.
You should try shutting your mouth, I grumbled, brushing my hair from my face. It felt greasy. That couldn't be good.
What did you say to me?
Lila flounced down the stairs, stopping right in front of me. Her hands were on her narrow waist, which looked thinner than normal thanks to the corset and hoop skirt under her bright pink dress. I didn't say anything, I said, bartering for time. I wasn't sure what to do. Do you need something?
I need my breakfast,
Lila said.
You were supposed to serve it to me 5 minutes ago. I'm hungry.
I pointed to the pot above the open flame in the fireplace. Go nuts.
Excuse me?
Lila's eyes were narrow slits of seething hatred.
Are you suggesting I cook my own breakfast?
Or go hungry, I said. I don't really care which. Although, to be fair, I'm guessing you'll be quiet if you have something shoved in that huge mouth of yours, so I would prefer that you ate something.
I...
Lila's mouth was open, but only staccato sounds emanated. It was a nice change of pace. Have you seen any strangers around, I asked.
Strangers?
3 men and 2 women. They would probably be dressed in clothes you would find odd.
I find you odd,
Lila said.
You're speaking to me as though we're equals. We may be stepsisters, but you're not my equal. You need to learn your station in life.
Thanks for the suggestion, I said. Where's the front door to this place? I need to get out of here. Which way is the yellow brick road?
What are you talking about?
A now furious Lila asked.
Have you gone crazy? Have you lost your mind? Are you suffering from the vapors?
I might be going crazy, I conceded. I'm pretty sure my mind is teetering on the edge. I have no idea what the vapors are. Is that like gas? I definitely have heartburn, which is pretty interesting since I haven't eaten in hours.
I can't even look at you,
Lila said, covering her eyes dramatically.
You're like some horrible monster.
You're as lovely as ever, I said, pushing past her and moving toward the door. Just give me a hint. Do I want to make a right or a left when I get out of this room? I need to get out of this place. I am not finishing this story. I hate this story.
What story?
You wouldn't believe me if I told you, I replied, glancing into the hallway. There was nothing to signify which was the correct way to go. The structure was made of stone, high-arching doorways, cutting into the granite walls at regular intervals. It appeared to be a sort of castle, but I couldn't be sure. So, right, left?
I'm telling,
Lila said, shoving past me and taking a hard right.
You're going to be in so much trouble, you won't be able to walk when Mama's done taking the switch to you.
Mama? Ugh. Who did Aunt Tilly cast in that role in her little fantasy world? It couldn't be good. Despite my better judgment, I followed Lila down the long hallway. If I could find a way to get outside of this place, I could walk until I found the yellow brick road and my family.
Mama!
I rolled my eyes. Lila was even more annoying in this world. At least I knew she was behind bars in the real world. She was allowed to run around willy-nilly here. Life just isn't fair sometimes.
Mama!
Lila's long corkscrew curls swung vigorously as she stomped down the hallway. I had an incredible urge to yank one of them. I had no idea why.
Mama!
Why are you screeching? Another figure popped into view from one of the doorways. It took me a second and a bevy of unhappy memories from my childhood to recognize her. I didn't think this was Mama. This had to be the other stepsister, even though she didn't look exactly the same. A little more weight spreading around her hips than I remembered throwing me. Years couldn't erase the pinched and unpleasant face of Rosemary. Rosemary tucked a strand of dirty blonde hair behind her ear. Unlike Lila's bouncy curls, lifeless hanks that looked as though they hadn't encountered a brush in years marked Rosemary's locks.
Where is our breakfast, Cinderella?
It's in the pot in the kitchen, I said. Which way is the door? I need to get out of here.
How are we supposed to eat if it's in the kitchen?
I would suggest using a spoon, I said, or in your case, maybe a shovel. Rosemary was as flummoxed as Lila.
Is this supposed to be some kind of joke?
Well, I'm sure you go through life with people laughing every time they see you. I can assure you this isn't a joke, I said. Now where's the door?
I'm telling Mama,
Rosemary said, placing her hands on her wide hips and glowering at me.
You're going to be in so much trouble, you won't know what hit you!
Whatever, I said. I need to find the door. Where is it?
Mama!
Rosemary's voice was even more annoying than Lila's. Nails on a chalkboard would be a reprieve.
What are you two screeching about?
I swiveled quickly, my gaze landing on another familiar figure from my life. This one was jarring. Edith? Edith was the resident ghost at the Whistler, the Hemlock Cove newspaper where I worked. She'd been haunting the offices since she keeled over at her desk decades earlier. I'd never known her as anything other than a phantom presence. Seeing her whole, blood pounding through her veins, was fascinating.
What's going on? Edith asked. Why is everyone yelling?
I can't believe you're real, I said, touching her shoulder. Well, I know you're not real. I can actually touch you, though. It's so different. Do you feel different?
Are you somehow addled?
Edith jerked her shoulder from my probing finger.
Have you forgotten your station in this house?
I guess, in a weird way, it made sense for Aunt Tilly to turn Edith into a nasty stepmother. She'd always had a problem with the women in life. Constantly complaining that Edith was trying to steal Uncle Calvin from her. I had no idea whether that was true, but Aunt Tilly's dislike of Edith was legendary. It was dwarfed only by her dislike of Aunt Willa, Rosemary, and Lila. I shouldn't have expected anything else when Aunt Tilly decided to paint a picture of otherworldly villains. I'm guessing I'm your personal house slave, I said. The thing is, I have to meet some people. I can't make a breakfast this morning. You're on your own. Edith's dark eyes fixed on me, and while she was never overly fond of me, unless she needed something, I found overt hatred there now. I inadvertently took a step back.
Who are you meeting?
Edith asked, suspicious. Just some friends, I said. We're going to a party.
What party?
I think it has a lot in common with a pity party, I replied.
I think you're up to something, Edith said. I think you're trying to sneak into the castle.
Isn't this the castle? Edith ignored me.
I think you heard about the prince picking a bride tonight, she said. Do you honestly think you have a chance with the prince? You're a servant. You'll never be anything other than a servant.
I'm not interested in the prince, I said. I don't particularly like princes. I'm happy with my lot in life, which isn't here.
Oh, I know what you're trying to do,
Edith said, reaching over and grabbing my chin so I had no choice but to focus on her.
I won't let you mess with Rosemary and Lila's chance to snare a prince.
I jerked my chin out of her hand, grimacing when I felt her claw-like fingers catch on my skin. I don't care about your stupid prince. I don't care about your castle. I don't care about any of it. I just want to get out of here. I stalked toward the far end of the hallway, hoping I could find an external door if left to my own devices for 5 minutes without nattering voices burrowing into the back of my brain. Things probably would have been fine if I had kept my mouth shut. It's not my nature, though. I turned around long enough to grace Edith with a withering look. And neither one of your terrible daughters has a chance with the prince. Rosemary looks as though she fell off the back of the ugly truck, and Lila has the personality of my ass. Neither one of them has a chance. Just suck it up. 2 hours later, I was sitting in the storage room where Edith, Rosemary, and Lila locked me in after wrestling me down and, quite frankly, pulling my hair. My scalp hurt, and I was really grumpy. I was at a loss. Somewhere out there, Landon was looking for me. I knew it. He was probably panicking because he couldn't find me. Or, and this was a troubling thought, he was about to start waltzing with hundreds of desperate women at the castle. What if he was the prince? I was Cinderella, after all. I was supposed to claim the prince. Crap, I groaned, dropping my head into my hands. I should have killed Lila the second she walked into the kitchen.
Well, that would have been a stupid idea. Murderers can't marry a prince.
I lifted my head when I heard the voice, my mouth dropping open at the face peering through the small window in the door.
Aunt Tilly? I'm not your aunt, nincompoop,
Aunt Tilly snapped.
I'm your fairy godmother.
That's worse, I said. You get me out of here right now. I jumped to my feet and stormed to the door.
I can't believe you did this to us. We're your family. Do you have any idea how horrible this night has been? How many times do I have to tell you that I'm not your aunt?
You are my aunt, I said. You're also the narrator of this book. You trapped us in the book, and now we're stuck. You get me out of here right now!
Aunt Tilly sighed and stepped away from the door. The lock tumbled, allowing the door to spring open, and when I strode through it, I pulled up short when I saw what Aunt Tilly wore.
You're dressed up in a ball gown?
It wasn't your run-of-the-mill ball gown.
It was a floor-length blue monstrosity with more sequins and crystals than should be allowed by law.
In addition to the dress, she carried a wand. I kind of wanted to steal it and thwack her over the head with it.
This is how I normally dress!
Aunt Tilly sniffed, crossing her arms over her chest obstinately.
I'm a fairy godmother. I always dress like this.
I miss the camouflage and combat helmet, I snapped. Are you aware of what's going on here?
You're Cinderella, Aunt Tilly said. You need to go to the ball so you can snag your prince.
I already have my prince, I said. I just can't seem to find him right now. Do you know where he is?
He's at the castle.
Are you sure?
I'm your fairy godmother,
Aunt Tilly said.
Of course I'm sure.
I sighed, pinching the bridge of my nose as I looked to the ceiling. What do I have to do?
I'm glad you asked, Aunt Tilly said, smiling. The first thing we need is a gown.
I can't believe this, I complained. I hate this story. You hate this story. Why am I the one who got it? Clove is the one who would have loved this story. You should have put her here. Although, I have to say, having Edith, Lila, and Rosemary be the evildoers in this one was a nice touch.
I have no idea what you're talking about,
Aunt Tilly said, brandishing her wand. Some of the other characters in this book have been self-aware, I said. Are you?
I'm a fairy godmother.
I narrowed my eyes. See, the problem is you lie, I said. You've always lied. You tell us what you feel like telling us as if it's truth, even though we all know it's a load of crap. Is that what you're doing now?
Do you want your prince or not?
Aunt Tilly was getting irritated. Some things never change.
I don't have all day. I have 6 more downtrodden women to get to before I can have a bottle of wine and relax. You're really slowing me down.
I decided to try one more thing. Are you aware of what's going on in the real world?
This is the real world.
If we die here, do we die there? It was an ominous question, but I needed to know. Aunt Tilly shrugged, noncommittal.
It all depends on what you believe. Now, stand over there. I'm on a bit of a timetable, and you need a coach and a footman before I can get out of here. Fairy Tale Jeopardy starts in 2 hours. I can't miss it. One day your prince will come. He's not going to put a glass slipper on your foot. He's going to be bossy and willful. He's also going to expect you to cook. And make sure you burn the first few dinners so you can keep his expectations low. If you're lucky, though, he'll also make you laugh. Make sure to keep him if he makes you laugh.
Aunt Tilly's wonderful world of stories to make little girls shut up.
13.
How far is the palace?
The footman who ushered me into my carriage, which left a little to be desired since it actually smelled like a rotting pumpkin, was the quiet sort. He hadn't said a word since we left Edith's Manor. It had only been 3 minutes, but it was an uncomfortable 3 minutes.
It's right here.
The footman directed the horses to the side of the road and pulled to a stop.
Where?
The footman pointed, and after serious study, a palace began to take shape in the mist. It was beautiful. It looked like it came straight out of a fairy tale, but I was still irritated.
Are you really telling me I couldn't walk the 150 feet here? This is ridiculous. Now I smell like pumpkin.
The footman opened the carriage door and extended his hand to help me out. I gathered the wide skirt of the white dress, grimacing as I tried to keep the uncomfortable glass slippers on, as I descended the slippery steps. Thanks, I said, dropping the skirt and frowning. Now I understood how embarrassed Thistle was wearing a dress that constantly made noise. Which way do I go?
I have no idea.
Are you going to sit here and wait for me to dance with the prince and then flee before midnight, leaving a glass shoe on the ground and a dumbfounded man in my wake? If so, you can go now.
I have no intention of staying,
the footman said. What are you going to do?
Well, up until 5 minutes ago, I was a dog,
the footman said.
I'd like to go back to playing with my bone.
I was overwhelmed with a mad inclination to laugh, but refrained. Knock yourself out, I said, fighting the urge to grimace when the footman started scratching his head.
Great.
With my luck, he was infested with fleas.
I followed a steady stream of excited guests, not missing the fact that women outnumber men by a large margin. Most of the men were older, and I guess they were expectant fathers trying to unload desperate daughters. The whole mating ritual was annoying. I've never understood the Cinderella story. Don't get me wrong, I like the talking mice. They're fun. I just don't get why Cinderella didn't tell her stepmother and stepsisters to suck it and move out. I don't get how a man spent one dance with a woman and thought he was in love with her. I never understood why a glass slipper was so cool because, let me tell you something, they're uncomfortable and they pinch. I would trade these stupid glass slippers for a pair of Converse without thinking twice about it. I tuned in to some of the conversation as I climbed the expansive front steps of the palace. It was mindless and tedious. I wish Thistle was here with me. Her snarky commentary would have made all of this palatable. I realized it wasn't only Landon I missed. I missed my cousins, too.
Have you ever seen the prince in person? I hear he's quite handsome.
I hear he has hair like a beautiful god.
I hear his teeth sparkle when he smiles.
I hear you can see everything when he wears his dress tights.
I couldn't help but smile at the visual. Were they talking about Landon? Had he been forced into tights? That might be kind of fun to see. The walk to the ballroom was long, and since I wasn't in the mood to get to know any of these women, I made it in silence. I was desperate for a friendly face. One that was real and not forced into a fairy tale role for a change would definitely be welcome. Once I made it to the ballroom, I scanned the sea of faces, hopeful.
With each passing minute, that hope faded. Clove and Thistle weren't here. Maybe this was a story for Landon and me only. I couldn't wait to see him.
Do you see the prince?
I arched an eyebrow as one of the other women approached me, her canary yellow dress nearly blinding me. No.
I'm Pumpernickel.
Bay.
That's a strange name,
Pumpernickel said.
Were you embarrassed by it growing up?
Well, Pumpernickel, I've never really given it much thought, I said, reaching for a finger sandwich. So, what do you know about this prince? Is he supposed to be a good guy or a douche? Pumpernickel's round face was bland as she regarded me.
He's the prince.
I realized that, I said. I just want to know what his personality is like. Is he bossy? Does he have a hero complex? Does he have long black hair and a killer rear end? Smile. Pumpernickel was confused.
He's the prince.
Well, this conversation was going nowhere. Okay.
What I'm saying is that it doesn't matter what his personality is like, she said. He's the prince. He's going to be king. That's all that matters.
That's not all that matters, I countered. That doesn't matter at all. That's the life he was born to lead. I want to know who he is.
He's the prince.
I was done here.
Excuse me, am I interrupting?
Pumpernickel's face turned an unnatural shade of red.
Oh, am I?
I pursed my lips and swiveled, expecting to find a waiter. If he happened to have some liquor on him, I wasn't going to turn up my nose. The man behind me was handsome but generic-looking. He wore a white dress coat and black pants, and he stood as if he had Antilles wand shoved in a very uncomfortable orifice. Oh, hey, I said. Does whiskey exist in this world? I could definitely use a double on the rocks. Throw a lime in there, too. I'm feeling a little peckish. The waiter smiled.
I see. You want whiskey.
What are you doing?
Pumpernickel hissed. I'm hoping to get a buzz on, I said. That's the only thing that's going to liven up this party.
I don't believe we have whiskey for guests, the waiter said.
It's considered a vagabond's drink.
I just met her,
Pumpernickel said.
We're not together.
I rolled my eyes. What do you have? Vodka? Gin? I would kill for a choco martini.
I can ask,
the waiter said.
Most guests don't order off the menu at Royal Balls.
The smile he sent me was small, but inquisitive.
What house are you from?
Oh, the one next door?
The Markham residence?
I had no idea.
Sure. Are you related to Rosemary and Lila?
Technically, Rosemary is a second cousin, I said. Lila is just a nightmare. Pumpernickel fanned herself worriedly, gesturing wildly with her other hand. I had no idea what she was trying to tell me.
You speak very frankly,
the waiter said. So I've been told, I said. You should meet my cousin Thistle. She's a lot more frank than me.
And where is she this evening?
Probably bitterly bitching while walking down the yellow brick road, I said.
Is that in the kingdom?
I shrugged. I'm not sure where anything is right now, I said. Speaking of that, where is this prince? We need to get this show on the road. The waiter smiled while Pumpernickel made mewling sounds in the back of her throat.
You've never seen the prince?
Nope, I said. I hear he's handsome, though.
I've heard that, too.
Shouldn't he be here by now? Isn't he supposed to dance with everyone and make his choice?
He is,
the waiter said. As if on cue, the music started, and I shifted my attention to the dance floor. Everyone retreated from it, creating a circle. It was more fun when they did it in Footloose. Where is he? I asked. When I turned back to the waiter, he was watching me with a wide smile and extended hand.
Shall we?
I thought only the prince was supposed to dance, I said.
He is.
Won't you get in trouble?
Not if I'm the prince.
Oh, holy crap. I'd been expecting Landon to be the prince. Of course it wouldn't be that easy. I ran my tongue over my teeth, embarrassed. You're the prince?
That's what they tell me,
the man said.
You may call me Reginald.
Of course. I shifted a look in Pumpernickel's direction. That's what you were trying to tell me, wasn't it?
It's a good thing you're pretty,
she said.
You're extremely stupid.
That's what I hear. I had no idea what to do. For lack of a better idea, and because every eye in the room was trained on me, I took Reginald's hand and let him lead me to the dance floor. Thankfully, because this was a fairy tale, Reginald was a perfect gentleman when he put his hand to the small of my back and began leading me around the dance floor. He seemed to be enjoying himself. I was thankful I could get this dance out of the way before slipping away.
Are you visiting your cousin?
Unfortunately.
You don't seem to like your family,
Reginald said, his eyes twinkling.
May I ask why?
I love my family, I said. I'm not particularly fond of one member of it right now, but in general, I love them. Edith, Rosemary, and Lila aren't my family, though.
But you said...
It's a long story, I said. I can't explain it.
I'm a good listener.
That's okay. Reginald spun me around the dance floor a few more times, the silence stifling as he racked his brain for conversation. When the song ended, I expected him to release me and move on. Instead, he kept me close and immediately started dancing again when the new song started up. I thought you were only supposed to dance with each woman once.
Until I find the woman I like. Reginald replied, grinning. I've already found mine.
Uh-oh. You don't even know me.
What do I need to know?
Reginald twirled me out wide and then pulled me back as I tried to escape.
You're beautiful. The most beautiful woman in the room, in fact. You're wise. You say odd things. You don't fear me. You're perky. You're perfect.
I'm not perfect, I said, my voice rising an octave. I'm pretty far from perfect.
Not to me.
You have no idea how much work I am, I said. I'm insecure. I'm whiny. I hate mornings. I don't like cleaning. In the mornings, my hair looks like it's been through a wind tunnel. I snore. I get irritated for no particular reason. Oh, and 3 days of every month, I'm unbearable. Reginald smiled. He opened his mouth to respond, but was cut off when another figure moved in behind him and tapped him on the shoulder.
May I cut in?
I almost cried in relief when I saw Landon. He was still dressed in his regular clothes, and even though he looked out of place at the ball, I'd never been happier to see anyone in my entire life. Landon! He shot me a reassuring smile and then focused back on Reginald.
I think you're dancing with my date, he said.
Your date?
Reginald arched an eyebrow.
This is my ball. All of these women are my dates.
Well, that sounds greedy, Landon said. How about we make a deal? You can have all the other women in the room, and I'll take only this one off your hands.
I want this woman,
Reginald countered.
You can have the rest of them.
I can only handle one, Landon said. This one.
She's mine,
Reginald replied.
I'm the prince. I get to pick my princess. I want her.
She's already my princess,
Landon said, gritting his teeth and forcing his face to remain placid.
I've already claimed her.
Then why is she here?
Reginald pressed.
She didn't have much of a choice, Landon said. I'm here to rescue her.
But she's mine,
Reginald said.
Listen, pal, stop saying that, Landon snapped. She's my princess. Mine.
He thumped his chest for emphasis.
We were separated a couple of hours ago, and I've been going crazy trying to find her. Now, I know this whole dog and pony show is important to you, but this princess already has a prince. Pick someone else.
I want this princess,
Reginald said, stubbornly pulling me closer to him.
She's mine. I'm going to have to punch him,
Landon warned.
I'm not joking. I don't have much of a sense of humor right now. I almost freaked out when the cottage dissolved and you were gone. I thought I lost you.
My heart rolled at the omission. I had a minor freak out myself when I found myself in a dirty kitchen. You'll never guess who my stepmother was. Landon waited, feigning patience. Edith. She was real. I could touch her. Rosemary and Lila were my stepsisters, too. It was awful. Landon made a face.
That sounds awful.
How did you know where to find me? I asked, resisting Reginald as he tried to continue the dance.
We were walking down the road because we didn't know what else to do, and then this castle, suddenly it was there, and we knew,
Landon said. He reached out for me.
Come on, let's get out of here.
Reginald jerked me away from Landon forcefully.
She's mine!
That did it.
Landon cocked his fist back and slammed it into Reginald's face. The force was enough to topple the puffed-up prince, and he crumpled to the floor at her feet. Landon barely glanced at him as he stepped over the prostrate prince and pulled me in for a hug.
I was really worried, Bay.
I thought you were going to be the prince, I admitted. That's the only reason I came to the ball.
I am the prince,
Landon said, smiling as he ran his finger down my cheek.
You scared me.
He gave me a soft kiss.
Stop that right now!
Reginald howled.
This is not how this is supposed to go. I'm the prince. I am. I get to pick my princess. I want her.
You'll live, Landon said. Or, well, you'll dissolve into a crying mess as soon as we're out of here. Either way, you'll be fine.
Reginald was desperate, and as Landon linked his fingers with mine and began to lead me from the dance floor, he reacted in a completely dignified way. Yes, I'm being sarcastic. He grabbed my leg under the dress, wrapping his fingers around my ankle, really digging in as he tried to hold on to me.
Gods! Gods! My princess is trying to leave me!
That's pathetic, man,
Landon said, wagging a finger in Reginald's face.
Show some manliness. You've got hundreds of women here who are begging for you to dance with them. Let the one who doesn't want you go, and suck it up. This one is mine.
Gods! Gods!
Landon exhaled heavily as I tried to wrench my leg from Reginald's tightening grip. That's starting to hurt, I complained. Landon snagged me around the waist, forcefully lifting me in his arms and dragging me away from Reginald.
Try to chill, man. She was never your princess to begin with,
Landon said.
I got her shoe,
Reginald crowed, cradling to his chest the glass slipper he'd pulled from my foot.
I win.
Yeah, you're a real winner,
Landon said.
Come on, princess. I have a few people who are anxious to see you.
If you see a beanstalk in the middle of a field, ask yourself an important question. If you have magic beans, why are you in the middle of a field? Go and sell them. Then you can go shopping. What good is a beanstalk?
Aunt Tilly's wonderful world of stories to make little girls shut up.
14.
He found you!
Clove clapped excitedly as Landon carried me back to the yellow brick road.
We were worried, Thistle admitted, her face relaxing when our eyes met. You look heavy.
You can probably put me down now, I said, sighing. She was right. The dress had to be heavy on Landon's muscled arms. Notice I didn't say I was heavy.
Sure,
Landon said, lowering both of us to the ground next to the road and then tightening his arms around me as he settled us into a comfortable sitting configuration. What are you doing? I asked, resting my forehead against his chin.
Just give me a minute, Landon murmured.
He was really worried,
Clove said, her eyes wide.
He almost had a meltdown.
Almost?
Thistle arched a challenging eyebrow.
If that was almost a meltdown, I'd hate to see the actual thing.
Landon ignored them.
I walked out of the cottage thinking everything was fine. I thought you were right behind me. When I turned around, though, the cottage and you were gone.
Sorry about eating the food, by the way, Thistle said. I should have listened to you.
Now I was the one challenging someone with a facial expression.
Landon kind of let her have it when we couldn't find you,
Clove explained.
He blamed getting caught in the story on Marcus and Thistle.
Which meant it was their fault I got zapped into Cinderella's life, I said.
How was it?
Clove asked, excited.
That dress is beautiful!
It's big and it's itchy, I said. I don't understand why I'm still wearing it. We finished the story.
Maybe you didn't learn the lesson you were supposed to,
Thistle suggested.
I had to wear that pink thing for hours after my story was done.
What lesson was I supposed to learn from this? By the way, my stepsisters were Lila and Rosemary.
Gross,
Thistle said, wrinkling her nose.
And who was your stepmother?
Edith.
That's weird,
Clove said.
It kind of makes sense,
Thistle said.
Aunt Tilly always had a bug up her butt where Edith is concerned.
Do you want to hear the craziest part?
It gets crazier.
Guess who my fairy godmother was? Thistle pursed her lips, tilting her head to the side.
Mom?
I shook my head.
Your mom?
No, it was Aunt Tilly. Landon stirred next to me, lifting his head so he could meet my worried gaze. Are you okay? You seem a little worn down.
I thought I lost you,
Landon said.
I'm fine now. Go back to the part about Aunt Tilly being your fairy godmother. Was it really her?
No.
Was she self-aware, like the wolf?
Thistle asked. Not really, I said. She didn't have a lot of information and kept telling me to shut up because she had six other girls to dress before she could watch Fairy Tale Jeopardy. But she didn't seem especially aware. Landon snorted.
Fairy Tale Jeopardy? That's just great.
She did say one interesting thing, I said. I asked her whether we died in the real world if we died here. She kept saying this was the real world, but she added an interesting caveat. She said that it depended on what we believed.
Does that mean if we don't believe we're going to die, we won't die?
I shrugged. I don't know. Landon brushed his lips against my forehead.
Well, I chose to believe we're not going to die here. I won't let that happen. We're going to work our way through the rest of this, and it had better not take too long. And then I'm going to kill Aunt Tilly.
I'll hold her down, Thistle grumbled.
Did you guys come across any other stories while I was locked in a closet? Landon furrowed his forehead.
Were you locked in a closet?
I told him the story, and when I was done, the laugh escaping his mouth shook his whole body.
Well, that sounds fun.
Then I'm telling it wrong, I said.
We did have one story while you were gone,
Clove said.
It wasn't a long one, though.
What was it?
Something about goats on a bridge with an ogre under it,
Thistle said. I couldn't help but smile at the visual. How did you get out of it?
Thistle was really agitated, so she kicked the ogre in his special place. It was a short story.
I was aiming for the knee, Thistle said. Who knew an ogre's equipment worked differently?
I laughed. It felt good after the past few hours of worry. I thought Landon was going to be the prince, I said, climbing from his lap. When I realized that wasn't the case, I decided to get away from Reginald by any means necessary.
I heard your plan,
Landon said, smiling as he stood and dusted off the seat of his jeans.
I especially liked the part where you told him you were unbearable for 3 days out of every month.
I smirked. Sadly, that didn't seem to turn him off.
I wonder if he's still cuddling your shoe.
Speaking of shoes, Clove said, glancing down.
How are we going to walk without shoes?
That was a really good question. Maybe I should just sit here and wait for some horrible fairy tale creature to come and eat me.
That's not going to happen, Landon said. You can have my shoes.
Your shoes are too big, I said. Thank you for the offer, though. Let's start walking. Maybe my feet won't get sore because this isn't real.
I think that's wishful thinking, Clove said.
We'll have to see, I said. We can't stay, and I don't know how to get out of this dress. I kicked the second glass slipper off. I think Chloe would have enjoyed the story a lot more than I did. I don't know why I got it.
Probably because you hate it,
Thistle said, falling into step behind me with Marcus at her side. Probably.
Just for curiosity's sake, how are you going to get away from the prince once you found out it wasn't Landon? Chloe asked.
I chuckled. I was going to kick him in a special place, I said, slipping my hand into Landon's. Not that I'm not happy for the assist, but I would have been fine on my own. I'm pretty sure I didn't need to be rescued. The moment the words left my mouth, my skin started to tingle. A white mist swirled around me, and when it dissipated, the heavy monstrosity of a dress was gone, and my jeans, t-shirt, and tennis shoes were back in place.
There's my girl,
Landon said, pushing my flyaway hair out of my face.
What did you say that ended the spell?
I don't know, I admitted.
I think it was the part about you not needing to be rescued, Thistle said. Aunt Tilly always said that was the problem with princesses. They never did anything on their own because they were always waiting for a man to come save them.
That made sense. Well, whatever it was, I'm just glad to be back in my regular clothes.
Me too,
Landon said.
Although, to be fair, that dress made me want to pick you up and carry you. I can't explain it.
I think it was the hero complex colliding with the helpless princess syndrome, I said.
I think it was because he missed you, Thistle teased.
Leave him alone, Thistle, I warned. It's been a long night.
No, she's right, Landon said. I miss my princess.
He leaned over and gave me a soft kiss.
No more separations. I don't like it.
I couldn't help but agree. Let's keep moving. How many stories can possibly be left?
That was probably the wrong question to ask. I'm fairly sure I jinxed us.
How long do you think we've been here? Clove asked, her voice drained. We'd left the palace behind us more than an hour ago. Since night was everlasting, time ceased having meaning.
I have no idea,
Landon said, tightening his arm around my waist as we walked. I was so exhausted I'd taken to resting my head against his shoulder. If sleep, while also being awake, was possible, I'd totally be able to do it right about now. Does anyone remember the other stories in the book? I asked.
We haven't done Wonderland yet, Thistle replied. Or Beauty and the Beast, or whatever the one that features Aladdin is.
That's disheartening, Landon said. I was hoping we had one left, two at the most.
Something tells me we're going to have to play out more than just the Yellow Brick Road in Oz, too,
Thistle said. I hadn't thought of that. My gaze fixed on something to the right of the road, my mind playing tricks on me as I decided what it was. I was so enraptured with the vision I didn't notice that everyone else ceased walking.
What the...
Where did the brick road go?
Marcus asked, confused.
It just ends, Clove said. Does that mean we're done with the story?
I doubt we're that lucky,
Sam said.
What do you think, Bay?
I heard them talking, but I was having trouble focusing, giving the majestic sight taking form in the field next to us. The overlarge moon was bouncing off each glorious inch of it.
Bay?
Landon tightened his grip on my hip. I think we're done with the brick road, I said, continuing to stare.
What makes you say that?
I nodded my chin toward the 1,000-foot-tall beanstalk sprouting across the way. That.
Oh, no way, Thistle said. You've got to be kidding me.
I guess we forgot that story, too.
Landon growled. It was an actual growl. If he was a wolf, we'd have to put him down before he ate us.
There are no words.
Are we supposed to climb that? Clove asked, mystified.
I'm not climbing that,
Thistle said, shifting her eyes to me.
Don't even think for a second I'm climbing that. There's nothing you can do to make me climb that. Get it out of your head right now. I'm not going to do it. I can't believe I'm actually doing this,
Thistle complained, glancing down at the rapidly diminishing ground as she climbed from one leaf to another.
Tell me again why all of us are doing this instead of just two of us.
Because if only two of us did this, then you and Marcus would have been the ones who had to do it, I replied, nonplussed.
How do you figure?
I had to be Cinderella.
I had to kick an ogre in the knee,
Thistle shot back.
Knock it off,
Landon ordered. He was in the lead, and it had been his idea for all of us to climb together.
We all agreed that it was best for the group to go together. No more splitting us up.
Plus, what happens if the next story starts whenever we land up there? Then some of us would be separated at the bottom of the beanstalk, and we might never see each other again, I said.
I can deal with that reasoning, Thistle said. I still hate climbing.
It's not so bad, I said. The leaves are arranged like a spiral staircase.
An elevator would clearly be better.
I couldn't argue with that.
How much farther?
Yeah, are we there yet?
Thistle chimed in. Landon scowled,
his joy at finding me unscathed evaporating with each step.
Can we stop the backseat climbing chatter?
Sure,
I said.
No,
Thistle said.
Are we there now?
Don't make me thump you, Thistle,
Landon ordered.
This is hell on all of us.
Yes, Dad.
When we get to the top of this beanstalk, I swear.
Everyone was quiet for a few minutes. Even though I knew it was probably the wrong move, I broke the silence.
Do you want me to add the beanstalk comment to your book of sayings ideas?
Landon sighed.
It couldn't hurt.
It took us almost an hour to climb to the top of the beanstalk, and by the time we stepped off the seemingly endless leaves, our legs were numb and our feet heavy. We fell to the ground, a spongy expanse of lush grass, panting.
It's a good thing we all came up here together,
Thistle said.
No one would climb back down that beanstalk and then back up again after making that trip. It would have been every couple for themselves.
See, I was right,
Landon said, his hand patting the ground next to me until he found my hand. You're always right, I said.
Don't patronize me.
I don't have the energy to patronize you, I said.
Do you think we can take a nap here?
Sure.
I closed my eyes, weariness overtaking me. I just need a short nap.
Me too,
Landon said. When I mustered the energy to look to my other side, I saw Thistle, Clove, Marcus, and Sam were already asleep. I'm not sure how I did it, but fear of being separated from Landon during slumber was more overwhelming than the suffocating exhaustion. I shifted over until I could rest my head on his shoulder. Landon wrapped his arm around my back.
What's wrong, sweetie?
I'm afraid you'll be gone when I wake up. I don't think we're naturally falling asleep. This is part of the next story.
I won't be gone,
Landon said.
I'm too tired to go anywhere. I'll be right here. Trust me.
I trust you'll try, I said, my eyelids heavy. The book has control of us. We all know that.
The book has separated us enough,
Landon said.
We'll be okay.
I hope so. I was barely awake.
I love you, Bay.
I love you too. We slipped into slumber, and nothing ever felt better.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. No, it's true. Looks aren't everything. If a man has a hairy back, though, that's a deal breaker. Find out what his stance is on waxing his shoulders before you give up the goods. If you can braid a man's back hair, there is a problem.
Aunt Tilly's wonderful world of stories to make little girls shut up. 15. I woke up to the feeling of grass poking into my cheek. Landon? I could hear bodies stirring around me. Landon.
Even though sleep was trying to drag me back down, I opened my eyes and focused on the spot next to me. It was empty. Landon was gone. I bolted to a sitting position, scanning the area in case he'd woken up and was looking around to see what fresh new fairy hell awaited us. He was nowhere in sight. Landon! My voice echoed across the open expanse of the castle courtyard. Yes, it seems we've found a castle. This one was even more majestic than the palace.
What's going on?
Thistle asked, rubbing her eyes wearily.
Where's Landon?
He's gone, I said, pushing myself to my feet and brushing the grass and dirt from my clothes. I knew this was going to happen. I tried to fight the tears pooling in my eyes. Thistle wrapped me in a brief hug.
It's just another story.
Why are we the ones who've been separated 3 times now?
Because Aunt Tilly was really angry at Landon when she cast the curse, Thistle said. Look at it this way. I'm still the one who had to kiss a frog. It doesn't get much worse than that.
Thanks, honey, Marcus deadpanned, joining us. It's going to be okay, Bay. I'm guessing we have to go into the castle and we're going to find Landon there.
Do you think so?
That seems to be the obvious answer.
Let's get going, then. I'm so tired of this.
We all are, Thistle said. We all need to remember this feeling.
Why?
Because we're going to need all this anger when we're digging a grave to hide Aunt Tilly's body, Thistle replied.
You're probably right. We started moving warily toward the castle. While the castle was tall and proud, the outside was overgrown with dead vines and brambles.
I'm confused, Clove said as we started climbing the stone stairs that led to the front of the castle.
Why did we all fall asleep?
So the curse could separate us again, I said.
I know I don't remember everything about Aunt Tilly's book, but wasn't there supposed to be a giant at the top of the beanstalk? Clove asked.
That was a sobering thought. I scanned the open grounds again. There was nothing menacing, other than the bad gardening, to threaten us, though. I think I would have seen a giant by now if one was here.
Let's not tempt fate, Thistle said, pushing me forward. Come on, Landon has to be in here somewhere. Let's find him.
When we do, I'm tying him to me, I grumbled.
I'm sure he'll love that.
It took 3 of us to push the heavy mahogany door open, and the silence that greeted us inside the great foyer was oppressive. The air felt stagnant with decay and neglect.
Well, this is disappointing, Clove said. Shouldn't a castle be pretty?
I think it's pretty, Thistle said. And he's good made, but it's pretty.
Her eyes brightened.
Get cleaning, Cinderella.
Bite me, I muttered. 5 sets of footsteps echoed on the marble floors as we trudged onward. An elegant staircase was built into the wall on our right, and a huge set of double doors beckoned at the far end of the hall. We were expecting a giant, but the castle design was meant for normal people.
Oh, what do you think? Clove asked.
I think this place is huge, but it's not made for a huge person.
I mean, what direction do you think we should go?
That was a pretty good question.
I think we should check the whole first floor before going upstairs, I said, considering.
We might as well search in an orderly fashion.
Are you channeling Landon? Marcus asked, smiling softly. He'd be proud.
Don't talk about him in the past tense, I ordered. Marcus's face drained of color.
I didn't mean...
I know you didn't, I said. Let's find Landon. He's somewhere in here, and he's alone.
He's going to be fine, Thistle said. He knows what he's doing.
I know.
If it's any consolation, he was worried about you for the same reason when you were whisked away to be Cinderella, Clove added.
I know, I said. It's not a consolation, though.
Come on, Thistle said, taking the lead. Let's find the Fed. He's probably swearing so much he's making the fairy tale gods tremble.
That was a nice visual. When we got to the end of the room, Thistle grunted as she pushed the partially ajar door open and introduced us to a whole new world. Unfortunately, it was a world none of us ever wanted to see. The room was alive. There was no other way to describe it. The furniture moved, the curtains danced, and the cobwebs in the corners shook in rhythm with music only they could hear. The sound of the door opening stilled the activity, and as a broomstick, candlestick, chair, and piano all turned to stare at me,
I had to swallow the scream that was bubbling up.
What are they?
It was the candlestick speaking.
They look like dolls, the piano replied.
They're pretty ugly dolls, the broomstick said.
Aren't all dolls ugly?
I wasn't sure who made that comment, but it sounded as though it came from above.
Holy cow,
the candlestick said.
The dolls can talk.
They're freaking me out. We need to get them out of here before the master comes in and squashes them like bugs.
That sounded ominous. I cleared my throat.
Master? It's talking again.
I rolled my shoulders, cracking my neck as I fought to contain my temper. We're not dolls. We're people.
What's a people? The broomstick asked. Does that mean you're an alien?
Sure.
Where's your spaceship?
It's parked outside, I said. We lost a member of our landing party. If we could find him, we'd be out of your hair. Not that you have any hair.
And out of your master's hair, Clove said. What? Does anyone else not want to meet their master?
She wasn't the only one thinking that very thing. Can you point us toward our missing alien? We'd be very thankful.
What does he look like?
He looks like us, I said. He has black hair, and he's tall, and he's very handsome. I choked up slightly. He's all alone, and we'd really like to find him.
There's no one who looks like that here, the candlestick said.
Are you sure?
Sorry.
That was disconcerting.
Don't worry, Bay. He's here, Marcus said. We just have to find him.
We should check upstairs, Clove said. I'll bet that's where he is.
Oh, don't go up there, the broomstick warned. That's where the master is.
I don't think we have a lot of choice in the matter, I said. The door at the opposite end of the room opened, and the figure standing there was horrific. It was tall and wide, arms too long for its body, and it didn't appear to have a neck. Its face was terrible, overlarge teeth jutting out from its mouth. The brown fur covering its body was long and matted, and when it opened its mouth, the only thing that came out was a terrible roar.
You must be the master, I said, taking an inadvertent step back.
Wow. The creature roared again. It looked like Bigfoot on steroids. I held up my hand, which shook as I tried to act braver than I felt.
I'm really sorry to come into your home, I said. We're looking for a friend. We need to find him. We'll be out of your hair as soon as we do, I promise.
The creature shuffled closer, growling as it opened its menacing mouth. I took a step back.
I'm really sorry. We're really sorry.
I glanced over my shoulder, frowning when I saw the empty space behind me, which only moments before had been occupied by Marcus, Thistle, Clove, and Sam.
You've got to be kidding me.
The monster roared again, and when I risked a glance back in its direction, I realized it was closing the gap between us.
Okay, it's okay. Nice thing.
I started backing out of the room.
I'm not here to hurt you. I'm assuming you're not here to hurt me. I need to find someone.
Another roar was all I could take. I fled the room, racing back into the foyer and finding it empty. The door at the far end of the corridor told me that my supposed family and friends hadn't stopped with abandoning me in a separate room. They'd abandoned me in a strange castle. The creature screeched behind me again, and I increased my pace, bursting from the front of the castle and skidding to a stop on the terrace, where a new horror was waiting. Thistle, Clove, Marcus, and Sam cowered in the far corner, the men working to shield their respective girlfriends. And the hulking figure, raising his hands in a menacing fashion on the lawn, towered over them.
Oh, well, I guess we found our giant, I grumbled.
No one answered except for the monster closing the distance on me from behind. Things officially just got worse. How was that even possible? The giant screamed, ramming his hands down on the ground with enough force to shake the courtyard and the castle behind us. Apparently, in Aunt Tilly's head, a giant has a lot more in common with the Hulk than anything else.
Well, great, I said.
This is just awesome. We have a giant cutting us off from escape in that direction. And the hairy beast is coming after me from in there. Thanks for having my back in there, by the way. I just love turning around and finding myself alone. Again.
We thought you were right behind us, Marcus said, covering Thistle's head.
Well, I wasn't.
Do you really think this is the time to argue about this?
Marcus asked, infuriated.
Get over here.
He was panicked,
He was doing his best to hold it together, but without Landon here to tell everyone what to do, we were scattered. We lacked leadership. We were a mess. Where was he? Instead of doing as Marcus instructed, I turned to face the giant and descended the stairs.
Bay, what are you doing?
Marcus screamed. I ignored him and kept moving forward. The giant stilled when he saw me, a meaty fist raised high above his head. I was done. I couldn't take another second of this. I don't know if you're watching this, Aunt Tilly, I said, my eyes clouding with angry tears. Enough is enough, though. We want to go home. We need to go home. You've taught us our lessons. Please, give me Landon and end this. I believe you can hear me. That's what you told me, right? I continued. At the Cinderella house, you told me that everything depended on what we believe. I believe we should be done here. So, I'm done. For one brief shining moment, I thought I'd won. The giant cocked his head to the side, its eyes softening. Then the world tilted as the giant roared and aimed its descending fist at me. My body flew to the side as something barreled into me from behind. Another roaring voice entered the fray, only this one belonged to the hairy castle beast. After tossing me out of the way, the growling monster caught the giant's descending fist and deflected it, whimpering from the force of the blow. The monster matched the giant, angry howl for angry howl. I rolled over on my side so I could glance back at the castle. Marcus was on his feet staring at me, worry marring his handsome face, as he debated running after me or staying to protect Thistle and Clove. He was caught. He knew it, and I knew it too.
Stay there, I yelled. Don't come out here.
Marcus didn't look convinced.
Bay, come back here. I can't just leave you. I made a promise to Landon.
What promise?
So did I said. I won't leave this place without him. That's not what I'm saying,
Marcus said.
Come back here. We'll figure it out. Let them fight. It's what they want to do.
I shook my head, turning back to the battle raging in front of me. The giant was stronger, but the beast was determined. I had no idea why it pushed me out of the way and sacrificed itself in the battle. It was almost as if... Oh, crap. I pushed myself to my feet. Realization dawning as I searched for a weapon. There wasn't much to choose from. The only thing that was even remotely an option was a large rock half buried in the ground. I dug my fingers in the hard dirt, grimacing at the pain as I clawed at the rock. It took everything I had to dislodge it, and when I had it in my hand, I turned back to the giant. The beast was on the ground, struggling to regain its footing as it continued to put its battered body between me and the giant. I didn't take long to think about what I was doing. I didn't care whether it was smart. I didn't care whether it would work. It was the only thing I could do. So I did it. I launched the rock at the giant's head as hard as I could. He was readying himself for another blow against the beast, but when the rock hit him in the head, he shifted his attention to me. The beast howled, enraged, but the giant ignored it. I was on the menu now. I didn't take a step back, and I didn't try to protect myself. Instead, I spoke the words I knew would end the story. I remembered this one from Aunt Tilly's book.
Sometimes you have to fight, even though you know you're going to lose, I yelled, clenching my hands in the fists at my side. I can't win, but I won't stop fighting.
The giant's face blanked at the words, and then, like magic, it started dissolving. Within seconds, the only thing that remained was the beast and my tears. The beast breathed heavily, and it listed to one side and dropped to a knee, giving in to fatigue now that the danger was gone. I closed the distance between us, the lyrics of an old song playing through my head. When I got to the beast, I leaned down, searching the clear eyes that stared back at me. You promised we wouldn't be separated again, I said, grabbing either side of its face. I love you. I closed my eyes and leaned forward, pressing my lips against the beast's. I could hear the zip of magic, and when I opened my eyes, Landon stared at me in astonishment.
How did you know?
No one else would be willing to die for me, I said.
I think you're wrong on that front,
Landon said, reaching for me.
I can't believe you did that.
Sometimes you have to fight for the person you love, I said, bursting into tears.
You do indeed.
Landon said, pulling me close as we sank to the ground.
Oh, cripes, you scared me half to death. Don't cry. If you don't stop crying, I'm going to cry. Oh, well, crap. I guess we'll both cry.
If someone tries to distract you by making you look in a specific direction, make sure you look the other way. The one thing they're trying